All irregularities will be handled by the forces controlling each dimension. Transuranic heavy elements may not be used where there is life. Medium atomic weights are available. Gold, lead, copper, jet, diamond, radium, sapphire, silver, and steel. Sapphire and steel have been assigned.
I'm Andrea Johnson, and you're listening to Retro Rockets. Join us as we explore the deep heritage of science fiction and fantasy, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Welcome aboard. My guest today is Steve Tanner, publisher at Time Bomb Comics. Folks, you're in for a great episode. Steve's enthusiasm is off the charts. Let's get right to it. And oh, by the way, this will make sense in about 10 minutes. YouTube will still be there in 45 minutes, I promise. Although I can't promise that Twitter will be. Hi, Steve. Welcome to Retro Rockets. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Thanks very much for inviting me on. My name is Steve Tanner, and I'm probably best known as the publisher of Time Bomb Comics in the UK, which is one of the leading indie comics publishers here in Britain.
I know you're a huge fan of classic science fiction. What are some of your favorites? What got you down this path?
Well, I remember kind of getting into kind of classic science fiction in the 70s. So when I was, I was a child of the 70s, a 70s child. And one of the things that they used to have on the BBC TV channel regularly through the year, they would show double bills of kind of science fiction movies and the horror movies from the 50s, 40s, 50s, and mainly the 40s and 50s, sometimes the 60s. So what really got me into science fiction was the classic stuff, the things like When Worlds Collide, things like Them, all the kind of those kind of driving kind of movies, which we didn't have drive-ins in the UK, but we used to see all those kind of things on the TV. They were all on a Saturday evening, and they would normally start about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the evening and run through till about midnight or so. And I was allowed to kind of stay up late on that Saturday to watch all those movies. So I remember seeing those things like, The Incredible Shrinking Man, The Man with the Extra Eyes, all those kind of movies were kind of ingrained in my head. And at the time in the 70s, science fiction on TV was quite unusual. You'd have Star Trek, the 1960s kind of show that was being rerun in here in the UK, and obviously you had Doctor Who. So as I was getting into Doctor Who, it was right towards the end of John Pertwee's run, and then Tom Baker. And I think Tom Baker is probably the Doctor that most people, certainly in the States, are probably more familiar with. I think that was the first Doctor that was seen across on
US TV.
Yeah, but then going through then into the 80s, some of the more the homegrown stuff started appearing, things like Blake Seven, but also then a series called Sapphire and Steel, which I don't know if you're familiar with. Are you familiar with Sapphire and Steel?
No, I know Blake Seven, but I don't know Sapphire and Steel.
Sapphire and Steel, it kind of featured David McCallum, who was best known from Man from U.N.C.L.E., of course, and Joanna Lumley. And it was a series, it was a half-hour TV show. And it was about these two characters, Sapphire and Steel, and you knew very little about them. But what they used to do, they used to kind of fight against time. Time was presented in the program as an evil entity in itself. So time would be doing all these various nasty things, and Sapphire and Steel would be assigned to kind of fight time itself and to correct things on their path, and it was a very unusual series. It's available. It's about to be available on YouTube. I know it is available on download on various streamers. And the thing I remember about it, that this would have been the late 70s, early 80s, and for some reason it was always shown in the summertime at 7 o'clock in the evening. Now,
like right after dinner in the summer.
Well, it's like still bright. It's still bright daylight. It's a bright sunny day, and the stories themselves were so unsettling that after the half hour, I remember I not wanting to actually go outside, even though it was blazing hot sunshine and all my pals were out playing with their bikes and that kind of thing. I didn't want to go outside because it was just, I wanted to stay inside where it was safe.
So I was sold on this show until like this moment. If it's too scary, I might have to watch it at 10 o'clock in the morning with all the lights on.
I mean, bear in mind, at the time I was watching it, I would have been about 10 years old. So I think, you know, what you find scary at 10, 12 years old is probably different from what you find scary when you're a bit older. I've watched them again since, and I love them. They're just wonderful. And there's so many ideas there. But one of the nice things about it that you don't actually, it's never revealed who or what they actually are. There's things that they're suggesting there's something wider to them, but that's always kept secret. So it's a fascinating program. And the title sequence at the start, if nothing else, just find the title sequence on YouTube and watch it. And I guarantee you, watch the title sequence. It's only about maybe 90 seconds long. It's really short. But you watch that and you definitely want to watch what the series. There's something about that opening sequence which is just amazing. So that's the kind of stuff which I really remember, the kind of the classic science fiction.
And our timing is perfect because we're actually recording our show in the, you know, at the height of the summer. So I can watch it on YouTube at 7 p.m. and I still have 2 more hours of daylight.
And hopefully our chat won't be so scary that afterwards I'll be too terrified to go out. I'm hoping I'll be okay.
We'll make sure that we end our conversation on a cheerful, safe, happy note so we can both go outside and enjoy some sunshine.
That's a relief.
I'd be very happy to do an entire episode of Sapphire and Steel, but I want to talk about Time Bomb Comics. So, first of all, where can we find Time Bomb Comics online? Website, any kind of social media you want to talk about? And then I got to pick your brain on how all this happened.
Okay. Well, Time Bomb Comics, obviously we have a website. Who doesn't these days? Timebombcomics.com is where we can be found. And that's basically all the kind of the best introduction to the kind of stuff we do. It's got the online shop on there, of course, which is also really important. We have a kind of up-to-date news. We also have a submissions portal as well. We're one of the kind of in the kind of comics publishers that we welcome submissions as long as they're sent to us in the right way. And all that's detailed on the website. As well as that, we have a social media presence on Facebook, on Instagram. We're still on Twitter, you know. We haven't jumped ship from Twitter yet, no matter how hard Elon tries to make us all leave that. We're still there. So we can quite easily be found, I think. And I think we tend to get, certainly these days, get some decent coverage whenever we kind of launch something or when we announce something on a lot of the kind of more indie kind of comics websites. We tend to get coverage on there, and they always tend to usually print links to our social media sites. I think we're quite easy to find. If you put Time Bomb Comics into your Google search, hopefully you'll come up with us relatively easily and quickly.
Even with all the drama that's been happening, just the last 2 days, even I am still doom scrolling Twitter nonstop. It is my vice. I cannot give it up. I know Time Bomb Comics has existed for quite a while now. What inspired you to start an indie comic publishing company?
Well, we started in 2007, and it's kind of weird. Like a few people now say, "Oh, you've been around for such a long time," it's only been 2007, and it kind of drives home how many people maybe kind of arrive and crash and burn and then go away again in indie comics. I don't know if it's indicative of that. I don't know. But 2007 is when we started. And the reason Time Bomb did start is because, I mean, I've been into comics since the 1970s. I always kind of really kind of, I loved them, you know, all kind of. I originally got into comics through, obviously, the British comics. And then it was the kind of the Marvel reprints that we had over here that turned me on to a lot of the stuff has been published in the States. And as I was really getting seriously into comics, it was that kind of 82, 83, 84. So it was the time of Watchmen and Dark Knight and all those really kind of iconic kind of series. That's where I was really starting to get my deep passion for comics, and it never went away. I'd been to conventions many times through the 80s and 90s. And when I say many times, I mean in the UK, there was just one convention a year at that time. So I would go to the one that they'd be held every year. I mean, now they seem every, you know, every day it feels like there's conventions. But I went to the conventions till about, I think it was the mid 90s. And then I happened then to leave England. I worked abroad for a while, and although I was still interested in comics through that entire time, I no longer went to conventions and stuff. I still have bought comics. I still, you know, read them. I still really enjoyed them. And then I was back in the UK, and this would have been in 2006. And I saw an advert for a comics convention, and I thought, well, I haven't been one for ages. You know, it's been, you know, 10 years plus since I wanted to just go, and just, I thought it'd be good fun to do. So, I went there, and it was a small little convention that was held in Birmingham. And, I went along, and I think my expectations were it would be very similar to the conventions I remember in the late 80s and 1990s, which were basically, there were loads of guys selling back issues. There would be, so, you know, a few panels and talks with some kind of current kind of in creators. And there would usually be, you know, a couple of guys selling their own comic. And I always remember these guys would always have beards. I don't know why, they always have beards, and they would always be pushing their little comic, which they produced themselves. And I always remember, I used to pick up one or two up, and you could always tell that they were kind of home produced, because a lot of the time they were even self stapled and sometimes hand colored. But there was a rawness about them, and there was a kind of enthusiasm that was quite nice. So I kind of expected that, all that kind of stuff which I remembered. And I went to this convention.
And how was it? Was it very different than what you expected?
Well, yeah, because the guys with beards, they weren't there anymore. Basically, some of them did have beards. But what I noticed are the guys that were selling now their home-produced comics, to call them home-produced would be a disservice. They just looked incredible. You know, they're kind of like the production values and the content and the quality. It was stuff which, you know, you couldn't tell. If you put it on the shelf in a comic store, you couldn't tell the difference if it was a indie or mainstream. You just couldn't tell. And I was blown away by this. And I remember coming away from that show, I kind of bought a big stack of these books. And I came away from that convention really enthused about how indie comics had changed, certainly in the UK, but also I came away with a determination that I wanted to be back at the show the following year, but behind the table, and have my own comic on the table. And that's what I did. So for that next year, I worked at pulling together my own comic. So then in September 2007, when the show was on again, that was the first convention I attended as a publisher, and my comic was on the table. And I'll tell you one thing about that comic, yeah, it was awful.
Be nicer to yourself.
It was absolutely dreadful. The printing was lovely, but that's about it. Yeah, it was even lettered in Comic Sans, for goodness' sake.
Okay, that's just a crime.
It was so bad, but the thing is, it was the starting point. And even though it was kind of, you know, look back, you know, cringe at it now, but it was the starting point. It was the learning curve. And everything went from there. And the thing is, what I'll always remember, that when I pitched up at that first show, you know, people, other creators, were really supportive of the fact that I was there and what I was doing. You know, no one kind of laughed. No one kind of said, "What the hell are you doing here?" You know, it was that sense of community right from the start, and that was the thing which really, right the way through even until now, it's been such a great part to be involved with. I'm assuming if it's a similar kind of community you have over where you are.
It is, but yeah.
Because the UK is very, very small and very insular. It just seems this big kind of little group of people all kind of just being involved with creating comics for the just joy of their interest in comics. So that's where it's came from. It was from doing that very first comic from there. And it's grown quite nicely since that point. And that was the last time I lettered it using Comic Sans. It was the first and last time. And it's been a learning curve since then. But it's kind of worked out quite well, I think.
I think it's worked out wonderfully for you.
Yeah, I mean, last year we kind of received the Tripwire Award for Best UK Indie Comic Publisher, which was just terrific.
Because that's so wonderful.
It's something which is just voted for by people who read the comics, which is terrific. And I'm kind of, you know, because back then I definitely would have, I you know, we were definitely small press back then, because, you know, Comic Sans would put a small press by far, probably small press. But obviously over the years we've kind of evolved a bit, and now I'm not really sure what we are now, because we do licensed titles, we have titles kind of on sale in on the newsstands as opposed to the comic shops, so it's I don't know what we are now. Beyond, hopefully, a publisher that publishes comics that people really enjoy. That's always been the intent, and that will remain the intent going forward.
You're listening to Retro Rockets. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. My guest today is Steve Tanner. You can listen to this and other episodes at retrorockets.podbean.com. We're also on Twitter at @RetroRocketsPod. Other than Comic Sans, what do you know now that you wish you knew then when you started?
I think what I know now is that, well, to be perfect honest, because I've always approached it quite measured. I never went in expecting an overnight success. I never went in to take it right in that kind of. So I think what I know now is the things that almost that I kind of thought would be the case and are now consolidated as truth. And I think the main thing is for me is kind of don't run before you can walk. You know, build slowly, build sensibly, but also never lose sight of your audience. I mean, that's really important, you know, that I mean, it's great kind of being invited on to have chats like this and see your books being reviewed on websites and this, that, and all that. That's all wonderful. But ultimately, it's about the readers. And as long as you kind of keep that contact with your readership and kind of understand what they're responding to, I think that's the thing that's such an important thing to do. And I think one of the nice things now is because we're in this age of instant communication, you can kind of reach out to your readers directly and they can reach out to you in a way that you couldn't do before. And I think, yes, you know, that's open to kind of abuse, like all these things are. But I think if you do it in a kind of measured way and a sensible an honest way, I think the fact you can build up this kind of readership who know you and you know them, I think that can really reap dividends, because especially if you're doing things, you know, if you're launching new titles and appearing here, there, or everywhere, the fact that you can let people know that and they will respond and you have an idea if something works or if it doesn't work, I think that's gold. And I think, you know, that's really useful to use. So I think embrace the medium, embrace the community, but embrace all the other things that go with it. And understand, I think, anyone that wants to kind of create comics and publish comics themselves, that I think the other thing I've learned is that the actual creation of the comic is the most simple part of the whole process. All that's easy. It's once you have the comic in your hand.
The marketing is hard. The managing the website is hard. And the creation of the item, you know, especially for someone with so much talent, that's the easiest part. And then it's all of these other, like, businessy things.
Yeah. And I think those other things that we tend not to think of as creative people, because as creative people, your instinct is to create. That's what you want to do. I think that's where the real kind of learning comes from, to kind of understand how that works and how you do that. And to do it in a way that, you know, you're not going to kind of just to have things as a money pit, which is really easy to do if you don't approach it as a business. And that's not kind of taking the joy out of it. That's just putting the common sense into it alongside all the fun creative stuff as well.
Right, because you want to be able to keep doing all of the fun creative things a year from now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now. And when it comes down to it, you are running a business.
Yeah.
I love that you are creating something physical that is at newsstands. A lot of what's being created now is only digital. Or if it is being independently published physically, it's very difficult to just happen to come across a physical copy. You're putting your comics on a newsstand where it's so much easier for a new reader to find you.
Yeah. But on the flip side of that, it's also a lot more risky. We're talking about newsstands rather than comic shops, and it's a very different kind of ball game, because certainly here in the UK, if you put your comic in the Diamond Previews catalog, and you have 500 orders or 1,000 orders, you send those comics out and you'll never see them again, and you'll get paid for those however many they're ordered. You know, if the comic store ends up with half a dozen that they can't sell and they have to put in their kind of dollar boxes, then that's not on you. If when you're going out to the newsstand, anything that they don't sell, they don't have to pay for. So they either send back to you or they destroy. So it's a real kind of that's the biggest difference. So you might get the initial, you know, you'll get that reach to the readership, but you've got to take into account that, you know, it's sale or return. It's not guaranteed. So that's the difference in approach.
I hadn't realized that level of risk. That's actually terrifying.
It is absolutely terrifying. And obviously because it costs so much more to kind of launch something onto the newsstand than it does, you know, through Diamond. Because at the end of the day, if you advertise your comic and you only get 250 sales, you only have to print 250. But, you know, at the very least, the UK is quite small. But we still kind of got our kind of quantum comic, went to 2,000 retailers across the UK. Plus then the guys in Ireland and Germany and Sweden and Finland and the Netherlands and Australia. It's great. You say, oh, yeah, you know, we're sending all these copies out, brilliant. But of course, the risk is you could get them all coming back, or they're just recycled, and of course, you know, you've got nothing to show for it. So yeah, so it's a very different way of doing things, but at the same time, it's been really exciting. It's terrifying and exciting at the same time. It flip-flops between the two, especially when, you know, in the launch of the first one, because the first one we launched it in April, towards the end of April this year. And the run-up to that, every day we were kind of flip-flopping, because it was just, what are we going to do if no one buys it, guys? What are we going to do? As it was, it's turned out okay. So we're quite happy now. And now the second one's out, and, you know, we kind of feel a lot more kind of relaxed about things now. But it's still that kind of, there's still that element of risk and gamble there, which, you know, I don't know if that's part of the fun. I don't know. But it's just, it means that we're reaching a different market. And I think that's the really important thing as well, because the reason why we put together the quantum comic anyway for the newsstands is because we realise that there's this whole readership out there. They don't go to conventions. They don't go to comic stores. They don't kind of buy things on Kickstarter. They just go to their local retail newsstand. And, you know, if the comic is there, then they'll pick it up. And if it's not there, they'll never see it.
Yeah, and they're looking for something. They're looking for something they've never seen before.
Yeah.
And quantum is it.
Well, so far it's so good. I mean, we're very happy with how things are so far. You know, it's landed really well, and that was good. And of course, the nice thing about it is because we've spent so many years in the traditional indie kind of communities and comic areas, we've built up that kind of existing readership. from the kind of that kind of, you know, comic shops and conventions and Kickstarter kind of audience. So there's been a lot of people who have gone to their retailer to get hold of Quantum, because they're familiar with who we are and the kind of comics we produce, and they like what we produce. So we've had that kind of cross-pollination of reader interest, which is really good as well. But it's been nice kind of like seeing some of the comments we've had, because there's been people who've kind of been so excited to find Quantum, because they say, oh, I went to my corner store and they never have comics at all, and it was there, and you know, so that's been great to kind of get that kind of thing. But yeah, it's risky and it's scary at the same time.
And you seem very you have a huge smile on your face every time you talk about how risky and scary and wonderful it is, so I think you actually really like it.
I do like it because, you know, it's something different, and the thing is, no one else is doing it in the UK. There's no other indie kind of publisher that's done this, so it's kind of a breaking new ground. But we're kind of hoping that it'll work, because what would be really nice is that then some of the other UK indie publishers think, oh, I'll have a go at that, and they'll do it as well, because it's not really about competition. It's about really building that audience, and I think if there's a variety of titles that are available through that way, it can only be beneficial for everybody involved. I think that's the important thing as well.
I love that. That's just like you're taking the risk, you're breaking ground, and you're doing it so that folks in the same business as you can see that it's possible. And I just love that.
That's what we want. That'd be great. I mean, because there's nothing I'd like to do and go to my local news vendor and buy someone, you know, buy a comic from something published by someone else from there. That'd be wonderful. So, you know, I hope that's where it goes. I really do.
So we've mentioned Quantum a handful of times, and you know about what it is and I know what it is, but I bet my listeners do not. Tell me all about Quantum, please.
Well, Quantum, I said, Quantum really came from last year. Last April, we launched our first licensed title called Spectrum, which was based on TV shows created by Gerry Anderson. So that was an anthology book, which featured kind of Captain Scarlet, Terror Hawks and Space Putin. And that was on sale on all kind of channels, Diamond, Conventions, Kickstarter, all that kind of stuff. But we also put it in the main news retailer in the UK called W. Smith's. And we weren't really expecting much from W. Smith's, because it'd been through all the other places, but it actually sold really well at Smith's. And we kind of thought, oh, well, that means that there's people out there that haven't seen it anywhere else. So we thought, well, let's put together a regular title really aimed at that audience. And so that's what we did. And of course, because, you know, Britain has a long, long history of anthology titles, most comics that are released that are homegrown British titles are anthology books. You know, something like 2000 AD, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, it's an anthology series. It came from the fact that weekly comics of the 1970s, that's what they always used to be like. They always used to be nothing different, always anthology titles. And there were dozens and dozens of them available every week. And then you look at things like Warrior, which I think a lot of people might be familiar with, because that was where Alan Moore first did things like V for Vendetta and Miracle Manor, that was called Marvel Manor at the time. That was an anthology series as well. So Britain has this long kind of tradition of doing anthologies. It is what people kind of respond to. So that's what we wanted to do as well, because we've also done anthologies previously with Time Bomb, and they've been nicely received as well. And I guess with an anthology, it also means that they can be less stressful to pull together in many ways, because you're asking on a number of people to maybe do 8 or 10 pages each, rather than one or
it's
two.
It's less of a lift for each person.
Yeah, 40 or 50 pages each. So it's that as well. So that's what we've done. So Quantum is an anthology series every 2 months. We thought we'd start every 2 months at first, just to see how it goes. It seemed to be a manageable kind of timescale. And it features the idea with Quantum. It tells stories which are set in worlds that are not our own. So, you know, there's some element in each of the stories that is kind of a bit fantastical, a bit different, whether it's straightforward alternate Earth type stories, or it's something which, you know, is a bit different. That there and there as well. So that's what Quantum is about. So we have five stories in each of the books, and they're continued stories. So the main story, that, you know, we're looking about 10 pages each for each of the stories. And then we have some kind of editorial material in there as well. Because again, one of the things we thought would be really cool to do with Quantum, because it's going to that new market, we'd be able to kind of let that new market know about all the great things that are happening in British indie comics in the first place. So in the second issue, we've got a feature on an indie publisher called Mad Robot Comics. So we've got a page on them showcasing some of their titles, and hopefully some of the readers will buy Quantum. We'll check their titles out as well. So the idea is we can spotlight other kind of indie publishers in the UK that will hopefully find a new audience. So that's really what Quantum is all about, is trying to kind of do something a little bit different, but at the same time that won't be so different from what the audience that we want to reach will receive. I mean, we are doing things which we think haven't been done before. What we're doing with every issue, we're giving away the cover art to one of the readers every single issue. We're just doing
it as a giveaway. Oh, I love that.
And all they have to do to kind of
how do people get involved in that? Everybody loves to have beautiful artwork up on their wall.
Yeah. Especially it's free, right?
Yeah.
when they buy the comic from their retailer, they just need to take a selfie of themselves holding the comic outside that shop, and post it on social media and tag us into that post so we see it.
And it's a nice promo for the shop too, when everybody loves a fun selfie.
Yeah, because, you know, indie shops are struggling as well, as you know. Yeah.
So they are here too. So
if we could do something to send people into the indie shops to buy stuff, well, that could only be a good thing as well, right?
I love that.
So that's what we're doing. So randomly we'll select them, one of those pictures, and they will get for free the cover art. It doesn't matter if it's issue one, if it's issue six, issue 18, every single issue we're giving away the free cover art. And I think that's a nice thing to do.
What a fantastic, that's just a fantastic, like a conversation piece to have up on your wall when you have people over.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing we're doing as part of that is these.
What is that?
It's a cue card. It's called Comic Cue Card. So it's like a plastic little credit card. It has its own little number on there, and you can apply for a cue card through Quantum. It costs $1.50 for postage and packing, but that's it. And then once you've got that card, you can use it to if you want to buy anything through the website, you get a special discount.
Oh, it's like a membership card, and you can get stuff.
Yeah, and if they visit us at conventions and they buy from our table, if they show they got a card, they can get an instant 20% discount off there.
And there's other things
that will be coming in as part of the cue card, which we haven't announced yet. But the cue card itself, the design changes every couple of hundred releases.
So you know how old someone's card is.
It's a collectible card in itself, because then each time the design will change. So if you just wanted to kind of collect the cards, you're more than welcome to collect the cards. If you want to actually use them, bring them along to shows, or you can do that. And there's other things we'll be using it for going forward.
In 10 years, you're going to have your table set up at a convention, and a few tables down is going to be the cue card collector. And they're going to have their own fan club, just cue cards. And it's going to be all because of the work that you did.
That'd be cool.
It would be.
And also we're kind of the other thing we've just launched it with the second issue. We wanted to be able to kind of try and get more people involved in publishing comics and let them know the nuts and bolts how to do it. because there's lots of kind of these free online resources that are great about how to draw comics, how, you know, all that kind of stuff. But there didn't seem to be anything really that tells you the actual publishing
side. Like how to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So what we decided, we think, hey, what the best way to do that? So what we've done, we've launched a quantum Patreon, but all the content, which is about the publishing, is all free. So you don't have to sign up. You can just, it just seemed the best platform to be able to kind of...
how do we find that? Because
it's called Quantum Comic. I think Quantum Comic / 503, I think it's called.
Okay.
I think so. And again, that seems something which we thought we'll make it free. So if people just want to get you know, some kind of hints and tips and advice about how to publish, they can just go onto that page. They don't have to pay for anything. They can, it's there, and they can read it, and hopefully they get something from it. At the same time, alongside that, we'll be putting some kind of quantum exclusive content on there for people that do want to kind of give us a dollar a month. But you know, the main thing is the guide to publishing, and hopefully that will kind of you know, inspire some people to kind of give it a go themselves. Because the more people are doing it, again, as I said earlier, it can only be a good thing. So quantum is kind of like the quantum comic is kind of one part of a few different parts of what we want quantum to actually evolve into.
I love the articles about how to do the publishing side of it that you're putting online, because you're so right. There's a million websites of how to draw and how to format the page so it's dynamic, but figuring out how to do the printing, how to do the publishing, the businessy side of things.
Yeah.
That information is so hard to find. Yeah. And here, like, you are giving away this resource.
Yeah. And even on, you know, how to run successful crowdfunding. There's loads of things to know about crowdfunding to get it right. You know, I mean, we've used crowdfunding since 2015. We've just launched our 24th campaign, and every single of our previous campaigns have hit their targets, succeeded their targets. So, you know, we know what we're doing with those. But let's share the knowledge, because a lot of the stuff that you need to do to get right on crowdfunding, it's quite simple stuff.
Yeah, but people don't know it.
You just need to be aware of it. And as long as you're aware of it, then you can kind of plan around that. You know, there's some, you know, so happy to share that.
That is so wonderful. Man, the things that I wish I knew the first time I did crowdfunding and absolutely nosedived.
I know.
It was bad, and I really should never mention that. So we've just got a couple of minutes left, and again, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. It was just absolutely wonderful to get to talk with you and learn about Time Bomb Comics and just your history in the industry. And you're bringing so much knowledge to independent comics and really helping this next generation kind of know that they can do it too.
Well, I think that's the thing. Just do it. You know, when I started, I had no idea if it would succeed or fail. But I always knew that if I never did it, I'd always spend the rest of my life wondering what if. And I always think noble failure is always better than not actually trying.
Yeah, you've got to try. Even if you fail, you have to try. So we're wrapping up here, tell our listeners again, in case they didn't write it down or hop on the website while they were listening earlier in the episode, where can we find you online? Where can we find your Patreon? Where can we find you on social media for as long as Twitter's still alive?
I mean, timebombcomics.com is the website. That's the best place to start. But if it says Time Bomb Comics on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, we should come up there as well. And one thing I just want to quickly kind of, I talked about Spectrum briefly. We've actually got our Spectrum 2, which we're doing another one follow up with that. That's live on Kickstarter right now. It launched yesterday. That runs for the rest of the month. So if anyone wants to check that out on Kickstarter, Spectrum 2 is the name of the comic. Please check it out.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Steve. It was so wonderful to have you with us today.
Thanks very much. Really looking forward to it.
The Retro Rockets podcast explores the deep heritage of vintage and classic science fiction and fantasy. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. Our show is recorded, mixed, and produced by Andy Robbins. John Wenger is our special consultant. Our music is by Meter through a Creative Commons license, and Carolyn Baker designed our logo. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time on Retro Rockets. Thank you.